So basically today we'll just continue with questions. And if there's anything that you feel relevant or how either question on what we've discussed or how to application of these kind of things that would make anything more useful, then if there's any ideas, we can proceed with that. Yes.
I asked a few days ago, you mentioned something that there is in Vedic culture this monarch and democracy and all these things included. So could you please explain to me how we should see it in Islam?
So the concept is that everybody, according to their varna, has a particular way in which they work best and in which they feel the most comfortable. But as is there in anything, because when you're dealing with the religious principles, there's restriction. So the freedoms are given where it will give rise to the manifestation of the best part of the nature. And the restrictions are given where that will control your undesirable parts. And then if it's done in this way, properly like that, then you can get a proper blend of, social interaction that works. Problem comes is when somebody's nature, the bad side comes out and the good side is repressed or misused. Then you have a problem. So you'll find that character is there in everyone. Just like for children, because they're younger, then naturally they tend to be frivolous. But at the same time, because they are younger, it's very obvious for them that they are not the senior persons. They are not the most knowledgeable and most experienced. So if you bring out the side of them respecting others and learning to work with others, and you restrict the frivolous part, to just some time in the day they have for playing or, some occasions, then you get a very nice child. While if it goes the other way, they figure that they're very expert at whatever they do and they play whenever they like and don't respect others, then there's a big problem, So the whole idea is, if you restrict their respect and allow the frivolous side to go, then it's a great problem. So it's not, the system that you're using is not the most essential point. That's just practical. One particular, like if you want to do a particular work, a particular tool works best for that. If you know what you want to get done, you may be able to improvise. But one has to understand what are the principles you're trying to obtain. Right? So in this, then we see that in the different stratus of society, that your common general mass of people, they work best where they're under the protection of the government and basically taken care of, like this. So this kind of like socialistic kind of aspect works very, very nicely for them. But we see that the socialist idea, it just takes care of the people but doesn't encourage economic development nor necessarily proper caring government. So this means that the business, actual business itself, then has to be able to work according to the principles of capitalism, that they are able to buy and sell and do these things to create economic development. So that must be allowed, though at the same time as that must be restricted so that they do not unnecessarily exploit the situation. In other words, there's always this aspect to bring out the service side or the benefit side and restrict that side which will create exploitation. Like for your general populace, they're taken care of, but then at the same time is then in their character must also be developed that aspect of service and loyalty and gratefulness, all these nice qualities are there, then you feel like taking care of someone. Just like if you have a child and they are properly behaved, you want to take care. And if they become arrogant, even though it's proper for the parents to take care of the children, it becomes a great burden. the emotional exchange is lost. So the idea in the Vedic culture is the most important thing that someone needs is the emotional exchange. Because the idea is then we have to just transform that from emotional exchange on the material platform to emotional exchange on the spiritual platform. You know, with the Lord and His devotees. That's the purpose. And the senses and all that come with, when there's emotional exchange, you'll do it through mediums that the senses are taken care of. You know, didati pratigrinati guhya makiti pichati bunkte bojayate. You're giving gifts, something to eat, you know, discussing confidentially. So all these things, you're using your eyes, your ears, your nose, your mouth, all these things are being used to for the expression of relationship or rasa. So the culture is meant that the emotional exchange is kept on its optimum, and those that will restrict that or disturb that are reduced, you know. So then if the common people are going to be, you know, do their work and being taken care of so they don't have to worry about things, they also have to be grateful to that, loyal to those people taking care of them and all these different things. Then you get a nice balance. Then those who are doing the economic growth, they have to be able to feel that is, you know, they are doing this work, they're respected for that work. The more they can produce wealth, the more they're respected. Just like for the common person, the more he's expert at his area of art and that, the more famous they are by their age, they're respected. Then they feel satisfied. So the business community, those who are able to create more economic development, they must be respected. And then they have to give a portion of that for the overall governance of the community, of the society. So they, yeah, and they have to feel that it's going for someone's good. It's not exploitation, right? They've worked very hard. They've created this economic development. They can't just feel that someone's just coming and taking it away. Therefore, there is restriction on how much you can take, right? The government can take 25% or take, you know, 18%, like that. These are generally the two figures between 18 to 25, probably depending upon what is needed, what is necessary. 25 would be the maximum, 18 would probably be the, you know, general minimum. But so in taking that, the businessman's mind can be fixed that he knows this much is gone. So the mind just accepts that, and he knows what's left, that's theirs. Then it's recommended, now you give in charity, you do all these different things. You know, you do good work also with that money. And then they feel, I'm doing the work. Because if they do the money, so it's taken away, someone else then uses it, does good work, but they don't feel they're getting any credit for that. So of course they are, but they're not, they don't feel, because the emotional exchange is not there. They give to someone in charity, people respect that, or they appreciate that, or, you know, they're glorified for that. So that aspect must be there. That's why sometimes you have a devotee doing business or generating a lot of funds, and then it's just thought, well, if you don't give all of it to the temple, just like that, without thinking, then you're in Maya. But the thing is that mentality doesn't go with generation of funds. So the person who's expecting it doesn't actually understand psychology. He doesn't understand personal relationships. You know? So someone may give once, but then that's it. You know, a businessman generally will give up all his business and everything once, you know, and then take up vanaprastha and that. They won't do it many times. They won't do it and then after 3 months and give you like that. It means there's a certain amount that they can expect. Yes, I want to give this every month, like this. And then if there's other projects, this and that, they're encouraged, they're inspired, they like the people who are working above them, they naturally like to give. Like that, especially for specific things, right? It's general, no one likes to give for maintenance, they like to give for projects, something you can see, you know, capital investment or big festivals or, so one has to see that nature and deal with that, and that's how then someone will give. Like that. The idea is you're getting profit, so you see, instead of just getting material profit, I'm getting spiritual profit. But one has to do within the mentality. So this means then the next level up must then be very fair and equal in their dealings and very proper. And the mood of taking things is for that shelter. It means the tax is simply for shelter of the whole community. They take that money, and with that they do good work for facility for the people. You know, they maintain, you know, the roads and water and whatever is necessary for the interaction. You know, the protection, you know, their whatever is needed in the government. So people can see, yes, they're getting some benefit from it. The level of, one gives taxes and then one sees the level of pranamoy is maintained very nicely. Right, your justice, your common facilities, the economic growth, all these different things are taken care of. So then one is very satisfied with that mentality. Yes.
So many times nowadays you hear this constant misfire that, you know, it's hard as well to find an application for this one. You know, so can you please comment on that?
Yeah, we're still working on his, so we'll try to work it in. Because we only got halfway through. Hate that. We'll come to it. Then those who are leading that community, the main element of their work is that they can give shelter. And as Jai Dwaitamars was pointing out yesterday, is that they have they're trained properly in the scriptures, so they know what are the standards and what is the actual laws of God. Like that. And they have devotion for the Lord. In other words, they know the purpose of this is to serve the Lord and to benefit, you know, themselves and others with this understanding. And they have the martial spirit. So they have no problem to, you know, take up the challenge like that. And if there's, you know, something's going right, then everything's peaceful. If something's going wrong, they'll step forward. You know, people, it's like everyone wants somebody to do something, right? So that person who will come forward and do it properly, you know, with fairness and proper consideration, everybody respects. You know, if something's going wrong in a community or society, everyone wants a solution. But the problem is no one can step forward and do it because they don't have these qualifications. They don't have proper knowledge, they don't have proper devotion, nor do they have the proper martial understanding, you know, resourcefulness and protection and, you know, all these different things that are required. So if that mood is there, then everybody else doesn't mind giving tax or following the rules that are given. And when they give, they deal with the justice and all these things, it's respected. But it has to be that fairness is there, you know. In other words, a businessman gives his word, but then afterwards, if he sees that it's bad for his business, he'll go back on his word. You know, it's just common. He decides, okay, this is the deal, and that you're happy, he's happy, and, you know, come back tomorrow, and then he goes off and thinks about it and then recalculates it and figures out he's not making so much profit or there's a loss. Then you come the next day ready for everything, and then he says, I'm sorry, you know, there's been some, you know, something that we can't, things beyond, whatever. They'll have some very nice excuse worded very nicely that, you know, is just, you know, they broke the promise. But a king, even if it means loss, he won't break his promise. It means personal loss. Social loss, that won't be allowed. But personal loss, that they have no problem with. Because basically the Kshatriya and the Brahmin are practically the same entity. Just that one has more passion and is more, wants to see that the knowledge of the scriptures is applied. And they know they have the resources to do it. And they have that martial spirit to see everything through. They're not afraid of anyone. You know, like we see Abhimanyu. He's only 16. 16, just married. Right? Right, 16-year-olds, you know, you generally expect to just be sitting around and doing all kinds of stupid stuff. He's out on the battlefield. I think it takes 7 Maharathis to defeat him. And that's only when he's just using a chariot wheel. Right? He has no weapons other than a chariot wheel, but he spins it in such a way that when they throw the weapons at him, he catches them with the chariot wheel and throws it back at them. So it takes 7 Maharathis, you know, including Bhishma and Drona and Kripa, and all them, to defeat him. Right? See, he's a 16-year-old kid. The Kshatriya spirit, it's a special spirit. But in their fighting, it's not passion is such that we think passion, generally we mistake ignorance for passion, just anger. Like someone's always angry, we say, oh, he's very passionate. Kshatriya. No, anger is ignorance. Right? If it's just anger for oneself, you see, the Kshatriyas, they're angry over religious principles not being followed because it means somebody's being affected. The society can't run. The laws of God are being broken. They get angry. They fight over that. They don't get angry over themselves. Right? That's not the point. So that is, it's a different thing. You know? They're not angry over their senses. So therefore, they can be on the battlefield. And when power is shown, you know, they deal with power. So when power is shown, they appreciate it. That's why they like the battlefield, because so much power is being shown. And when someone else does something very good, they appreciate that. It's not that when the other Kshatriya does something that they say, ah, that's not... No, they appreciate it. That was very good. In fact, they want to fight with someone who has some prowess. Because if you're going to be defeated, you want to be defeated by the best. You would see that there is... I can't remember the name of them. There's a certain group of warriors that sometimes... Arjuna did it that one day. When he vowed that by sundown, if I don't kill Jayadratha, then I'll enter the fire. So that's a particular battlefield vow. And so many days, practically every day, then there would be a group, sometimes thousands of people who would make the vow that today I will fight and kill Arjuna, otherwise I will enter the fire. So because they have this vow, The rule is they get the first fight. Even if someone else is challenged first, they get first right. Because the other person will be around tomorrow. This person says by sundown, if I haven't fought and either won or lost, then, you know, I'll enter the fire. So they get the first right to fight. So every day Arjuna would be dealing with, you know, 10,000, 15,000, 25,000 of these persons who would come forward. So that would be the first business on the agenda. Then he would get down to the other bigger Kshatriyas. Because it's a glory that, okay, you die on the battlefield, but it wasn't just some schnook, you know. You got killed by the hand of Arjuna. You know, and people say, you know, that's a real Kshatriya. You know, he went forward, you know, such prowess, and he still went forward to fight with him. That means, you know, they had some potency. So it's a rasa that they're tasting. It's not just passion and anger and like that. It's an exchange. See, the modern thing is, I get angry. You know, like you have your martial arts and your films. But the guy is just himself. And it's me against the other guy. And his rasa is with himself and his ego. There's no rasa between him and the other person. That's why in these martial arts films, don't fool yourself. The people that are fighting are shudras, they're not kshatriyas. Right? Because on the battlefield, all those foot soldiers, those are the... See, everybody, vaishyas, kshatriyas, and brahmins, they all have shudras that assist them in their field. So they're shooters that assist kshatriyas who fight with them. They're the foot soldiers. That's why you don't have to challenge them. You shoot your arrow, chant some mantra, it turns into 50,000 arrows and kills 50,000 of them. You know, they don't mind and no one else does. Right? But a kshatriya, you have to challenge first. You can't just shoot them from behind and this and that. That's why Vali was so upset. That you shot me from behind. Why didn't you come forward and present yourself? You're from the dynasty of the Sun dynasty from Ayodhya. We've heard a lot about it, and now we find out you're just a coward, shooting from behind a tree and shooting me in the back. You know? And then he made the point, well, you know, you can look at it, well, you are just a monkey, so, I mean, that's for humans and that. But he says, yeah, okay, but you see how we're fighting, and, you know, I expected more from you. So there's a whole rasa going on there. And it wasn't until it was the point of you've taken someone else's wife and that person is there and can take care. It wasn't that they had no shelter and you could take care. You took. That's against the religious principles. Therefore, you are not on the proper standard of religion. Therefore, I didn't want to bother challenging you and fight because you were not fit to challenge. You were not on that platform. Then Bali said, yes, I accept that argument. And then he died peacefully. But the point is it's a rasa. It's a very strong rasa. So when the kshatriyas come out on the battlefield and they see fighting and they see all the... Oh, yes, please. All the blood and everything like that, then they become very encouraged because they know here's some real show of power. And the people that are on that battlefield, they're not afraid. You know, as I mentioned in that fight with Jarasandha in Mathura. You know, he would come so many times, and it's just the elephants were like mountains, little hills, and the pearls were like pebbles, and the blood was like rivers, and you know the horses were this, and you know fish, and all these things, and your arms and legs, and you know, and it said that those who were of weak heart, they couldn't see, you know, they just turn away. But the kshatriyas, they become very inspired, and you know, be looking around for their men to arrange their chariots, and you know, and checking their weapons, and it's a total different, it's a flavor that's there. So that flavor to take challenge and meet it, that is a kshatriya. And it's for the benefit of somebody else. Right? All those kings are perfectly situated in the kingdom. They don't have to come over and fight with Duryodhana. But here you're talking about, it's a religious war. You know, it's fought on a religious place, a religious war, based on religious principles. And they want to take part, you know, because religion is being established here, so they want to come. Duryodhana is the only one in the battlefield that is not in the proper mood, like that. But everybody else is coming with the proper spirit, you know. He's just got the wrong attitude. But everybody else is, you know, good, clean, fun. You know, so they're all coming. So they're not on the bodily platform there. This whole thing of their, Maharaj was talking yesterday, that they must have that prestige, the honor and that. But that is because if the seat is not honored, if the family is not honored, who wants to follow them? Who wants to pay tax? Who will be satisfied that this person's taken my money and I trust him? Because in our family, you know, no one has ever gone back on their word. So that's a great honor, you know. Like that Maharaj mentioned yesterday, the king has a place where there's a special courtyard that if someone through the normal channels of justice hasn't gotten justice, they can go to that courtyard and beat on that drum and get direct audience with the king. So it's a great prestige for a family that in our family line, this drum has never been beaten. So if somebody beats on that drum, that's considered not very good. It means somebody through your management has not been satisfied in justice. And now they've had to directly go to the top because your whole system failed. So it's always considered, you know, that it's not proper. Therefore also, the person who comes in to beat the drum better have a good reason, otherwise the guards are gonna end up in jail. You know? Like that, because that drum is just not beaten unless it's a real serious thing. So we see that Brahmin came and approached Arjuna directly. You know, my sons are being taken and none of you can protect. You're not kshatriyas. You know, what is your management skills? So then Arjuna took this very seriously. I'll do it myself personally. So it was a, you know, so previously, in Dwarpa, it seems to be it was more often used, but in the Treta, it was just like never used. The kings were so expert. I think that other Brahmin came, that you know they took 10,000 of my cows, and what are you doing about it? You know. So then Arjuna went to get his bow. But now you see here, he went to get his bow. He has to catch these people. These thieves are taking the Brahmin's 10,000 cows. But now, what does it mean, him doing his duty? It means he has to go into the room where Yudhishthira and Draupadi are. And the rule they've made, the pact between the brothers, is whenever someone's intimately alone with Draupadi, no one else can come in the room. Otherwise, 12 years to the forest. But to do his duty, it is for him more important to do his duty and go to the forest for 12 years than to have not gone for his own personal. Otherwise, how anyone can put faith in them? Right? That someone's putting their full surrender, so he has to give that full shelter. It means that it's difficult for him. So he goes into there, takes the bow and everything, goes and defeats those dacoits, gets the Brahmin's cows back, and then prepares to go to the forest. So even though then Yudhishthira says, no, that's for a normal thing, an emergency, you don't have to do that. But no, the word has been given. They do it. So it's a mood. That's the thing. It's a mood that makes the kshatriya. That makes, so they're very special. You can see also they're rare. It's not just anyone who likes to fight, and anyone who's passionate, or anyone who's, you know, likes to collect a lot of things and do it through managing. It means you can take management as an art, right? So because you can manage doesn't make one a kshatriya. It's an art. Anyone can perform it. So we see that people do business. Their business is management. Like a landlord, his business is managing. So he runs so many villages like this, and he takes the tax, but that's his business. So he protects the people, because if you don't protect the people working in your company, then you don't get your returns. So he sees all the people that are under him as part of his business, so he protects them. He may keep his small army, he may do all these things, he takes the tax, right? And then he gives that, you know, whatever he needs to the ones above him. He keeps his share, and that's his business. So even though it looks the same, it's totally different because the mood's different. You see the time of Shyamananda in the stories of Shyamananda. He's talking about the local kings. Sometimes he calls them kings, sometimes he says the Gopa, because they're Vaishyas. They're aristocratic Vaishyas. We see Nanda Maharaj. He's a Vaishya. He's the king of the Vaishyas. I think in the Phala Shruti, the benefits one will get from hearing the story of Prithu. It says the Brahmin will become, you know, topmost of the Brahmins. The king will become an emperor. Vaishya will become a king amongst Vaishyas. And a Shudra will become a devotee. Like that. So being the king of Vaishyas, that means they're still Vaishyas. Like that. But that's their king. So they have that mood. The good ones, they have that mood, taking care of this, that. But it's part of their business. It takes on it's different. In other words, the flavor is different. That's how you identify the varnas, is by the flavor. Generally, we take it by what you're doing. So because someone wants to get profit out of many areas, then we'll try to claim that we're all these varnas. But there's one single mood. And that singular mood, you can tell what varna they are. It doesn't matter what they're doing. You know, because Maharaj pointed out, you have these government officials, like ministers and this and that. You have some of them are Brahmins, but others are Shudras, like that. They're just hired people, like Ramananda Rai. He was the manager of the whole of South India, right? So that's not a small place. It's like a third of India he was managing. But he's doing it on the behalf of Mataraj Prataparudra. It's not his land. He manages, he takes the taxes, he does all these things, but it's not his tax. It's not his money. The land's not his. So he's not a kshatriya, he's a shudra. Though he's a big time manager. Like that. So when you have, when you go to the Harvard School of Business Management, then unless you go out and open your own business, but if you go and work for someone else, you're a shudra. So the Harvard School of Business Management trains skilled shudras in the art of business management. But the businessman, the Vaishya, is the guy that owns the company. Even if he doesn't come in, doesn't sell it, just because he doesn't sell, right? He hires people. Just because you can sell doesn't make you a Vaishya, right? All those guys, when you go into these sari shops and that, and all the guys sitting around and throwing out the saris like this, those are all shudras. The fat guy over in the corner wearing the torn t-shirt with chewing the pan and has the little box there, that's the Vaishya. Like that. But all the swank looking guys dressed nicely and doing all the things, they're all shooters. Like that. Yeah, so it's a very fine thing. It's the mood and what you're doing. So you have to understand that's why it's a culture. Because it's not so cut and dry. You know, it's not like I remember we had that old picture. You have the absent-minded guy at the chalkboard, you know, putting E equals MC squared. That's the Brahmin. Then the next thing, you have some guy in an army outfit with an AK-47. He's the Kshatriya. Then you have two really happy-looking guys sitting on a mountain of grains. That's the Vaishya. That one's right. And then you have the Shudra at the jackhammer. Right? So that's also right. But there's another end. The other end is you have a guy like Picasso or Salvador Dali. Right? They're artists. But they have a philosophy. They're respected all over the world as intellectuals and that, but they're shudras. like that. But they have philosophy, they move with the biggest top people, you know, the biggest political people, the biggest, you know, economic, anything. They can move because they're that fine of character and intelligence. So Shudras can be super, you know, qualified, like we were saying, Ramananda Rai. He's taking that position. Like that. He is, the king depends upon him to manage the whole of South India. Right? Because he's a manager, he's a hired man. The difference is you have a king of South India, and he is a vassal for the bigger king. It means he runs his kingdom, and he pays the tax if the other king needs it. And if the bigger king has to fight, he'll come and bring his army. Or if he has problem, the bigger king will come and help him. So it's two kings. But here he's managing on behalf of someone else. So it's a very different flavor. You know? It's just like when you have a corporate business, you don't, it, technically you're not dealing with Vaishyas unless somebody's got 51%. You know? 51% and they know how to run it, organize it. They're a Vaishya. But just because they just have, you know, they bought a few shares, somebody sitting in their place somewhere and they see some shares and they want to invest in it, that doesn't make them a Vaishya. And all the managers don't necessarily have to be Vaishyas. They might be, but they don't have to be. They just have to know how to manage business like that. So it's been thrown into the modern culture, kind of perverts varnas. You know, you have a doctor that works for a hospital, you know. So he's kind of like hired by the hospital, but he's doing brahminical work. You know, so it's not, they're not fully satisfied, you'll generally see. Those ones, they aren't your best. The ones that are really outstanding, the ones they have their own chamber and that, and they come and they do something at a hospital. They have their visiting times and that, and the hospital can say, we can get avail to the facilities of this particular person. Like that. They're the real, like, brahminical. Otherwise, just their art is they know how to, you know, cut up bodies or, you know, do different things, you know. But all the assistants to the doctors, you know, the anesthesiists and all those kind of people, those are all shudras. They're not doctors. So it's a very fine point between these. So the kshatriya is very special. And so they have to work on monarchy. You know, they hear everything and then they give a decision. So the Vaishyas are working on, like, democracy. They get together, they discuss this and that, like they have their board of, what do you call it? This chamber of commerce. They get together and discuss how to make more money or trade amongst themselves and this and that. And then somebody, of course, is the leader of it, you know. So you have a committee and you have a leader of the committee, but he's just one of us, but he's naturally richer and fatter, so we accept him. Like that. And as soon as he's not richer and fatter, then whoever else is richer and fatter, they'll be sitting there. You know? That's the term, Maharaju, sate. Sate means that you are very rich. And that's generally obvious by how fat you are. You know? Like that. You know? Because Vaishyas are so miserly, they won't spend anything more on food. Unless they're, you know, it's like if they're making billions of dollars, then they'll spend a little more on something to eat, like that. Otherwise, they won't. They'll always eat less. Same time is because they're making so much, they're kind of like reaching, you know, their peak in performance. They become very peaceful. So when they're peaceful, there's no anxiety. They become fat, also. So a fat businessman is a good sign, like that. But in some communities, like you see Gujaratis, they're always skinny. You never see fat ones, you know. The Rajasthanis, then they're fat. Like that. Mm-hmm. So it's the yeah. So we see that the Vaishyas work on democracy, Shudras on socialism, the Kshatriyas work on monarchy. Now the interesting system in the Vedic literature, in Vedic system, is the village level also works on, like, committees and village heads, and the Vaishyas work on that. Then all that piles up. You have in a village, you have one leader, a village leader. Then you have 10 villages. Amongst those 10 village leaders, there's one leader. So 10 villages, they meet together, and one of them is a leader. Then those, there's 10 of those, and then there's a leader amongst them. So how much is your population? That much levels you have. So finally it gets up to a level which is the lower court. And then, at that point, it's still a democratic process. They discuss amongst themselves, consensus, all these different kinds of things. They then present their problems to the king. You know, plans, problems, everything to the king. And then that's where democracy stops. Democracy is that they have the right to present their ideas, their difficulties, and their experience. But the decision of what will happen, that comes from the king. That's monarchical. You know? So everything has its line. It stops there. You know, it's like the Shudra. He's part of the business, does everything in the business, but he just gets his paycheck. He's not part of he doesn't get, you know, kickbacks off of the shares. Means the businessman is pleased with their performance at a festival or something where there was extra work like that. He'll always give something. But he will give it according to their personality. Right? He won't give more. You give too much to a Shudra, they become proud. They become lazy. Like that. You have to be very careful. Give how much is actually deserving, only when it's needed. Because they should work hard anyway. But because of the relationship and you're specially pleased, you're doing. It's not just, I worked harder, you give me more. No. There's a relationship. You're part of the business, you work hard, the business prospers. The business prospers, you get more money. You know, like this. So you want to see, in other words, the rasa is of the worker is, they care for the welfare of the businessman. They care for who they're working for, the kshatriya, the brahmin they're working for, that whatever they're doing will prosper. And I'm able to help, I do as best I can. And we have a relationship, you'll take care. So it's not business, that I do this and you give me this. See, they've basically, the businessmen are so clever, they've allowed the shudras to think they're businessmen. And to get things they don't deserve. Right? Means, we'll think it's a great modern thing, right? Oh, you don't have to work so hard. We've made you this nice washing machine or dishwasher and all that. Saves your time. So the person thinks, yeah, that's great. And he goes and buys one, right? But, you know, but that's not the real thing. Then the person has to go to the, you know, health clinic to get their health back because they don't do any work. The real thing behind it is that the Vaishya wants to make money and he's figured out a clever way to exploit the shooters. You know? Oh, you want a house and that. Okay, here, you can get a house. You know, you can take a mortgage, you can do all these different things. Businessman is his business. And the shudra goes his whole life paying it back. Not only that, is instead of paying the normal amount, he pays a third again more or so. So he makes more profit, or something's 50% more, 60%. Because it's been stretched out, because he's not a good businessman. Businessman will think, no, I won't do that. I'll work in such a way, get my money together, and buy the house or car for cheaper. Right? And then that money saved, I'll invest that in something else and make profit off of that. The shooter doesn't think that way. He'll just think, wow, I can go out and get my house and car today. Just what I wanted. Like that. So he's being exploited by the businessmen. So the kshatriyas keep the vaishyas from doing that. Right? And that's their business. It's to keep vaishyas from getting overly clever. You know? But, so the point is they've turned them into businessmen to get more out of them. Right? And when you don't like, you can fire them. But before it was, they were part of the family. Right? It means the shooters in the business, they were part of the family. They were dealt with like family members. One of the workers, you know, it's their daughter's time to get married. And all this, then the businessman will help see arrangements and give something for dowry and all these different things. Because it's like part of the family. So the whole thing was relationship. You know, the bodyguards and the, you know, foot soldiers of the king, that's part of the whole thing. He cares for them, they care for him. You know, the queen, she has her assistants, like, Devaki. When she was married, she came with 2,000 maidservants. So they're all shudras. So they are the servants of the queen. They don't have another husband. So basically, technically, they're the assistants of the queen married to the king. So they're kind of in an indirect way also wives of the king. But their children can't become, you know, can't sit on the throne. So you get, they're called, you know, Shudrani. They're Shudranis. And so their children, like Vidura, he was the son of a Shudrani. So they're given all the facilities and basically royal prestige, but they can't sit on the throne and, you know, when push comes to shove, then they, you know, they kind of, they step to the side. And they give their advice, they're there, they grow up in the palace, they know so many things. You know, their mothers are trained, are always with the queen, so they know what's going on, they see everything. So it's a very, very fine, but they're fully taken care of, everything's there, you know. And that mood of being able to, how you say, be satisfied seeing someone else satisfied is a special quality that they experience that the other three orders don't as directly. That's why it says that, you know, the Brahmin will become the best of the Brahmins, the king, the emperor, the Vaishya, the king amongst Vaishyas. But, you know, it doesn't say anything about becoming a great devotee, but the Shudra will become a devotee. Because the Shudra already is in that mood of when someone else is pleased, I'm pleased. My master is pleased, I'm pleased. So they just, it's just now they understand the Lord is our ultimate master. So it's very easy for them. So the Vedic society gives advantages on where there's a seeming disadvantage, there's also a great advantage. So we may say, well, the Shudras always have to work and serve others, but because of that, it's very easy for them to just serve the Supreme Lord. They got to serve anyway, and they know it. So I'll serve the Supreme Lord, or I'll do my service, but with that understanding. So there's nothing to distract them. I'm serving anyway. I'm serving someone higher with greater qualities. So it's very easy for me to understand to serve the Supreme Lord. That's why the devotees always take the position of servant. You take das, dasi. Right? So that's that, because that's the best situation in which to advance. So it's a great advantage for them on that side. That's why it's not barred. And you see so many examples of stories where a Shudra is advancing very, very nicely, while someone on a higher level is not. Because of the mentality. The Kshatriya gets carried away by his power and what he's doing, and he sometimes forgets. That's why we need the next level, what we're talking about, is the Brahmins. The Brahmins, then, they are independent of the government, and they have no obligations to anybody but the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord has given a code of conduct and all that, and so they follow that. They don't have to establish it for others. They don't have to, they just have to do that themselves. So they work directly under God. But because it's within their rules that this is, they know the system because of their detachment and their intellectual abilities. They know the system. So therefore they advise everybody else how to follow it nicely. And that's their dharma. That's how they add into the society. Right? So in this way, no one has, in other words, the Vaishyas, the Shudras have to be controlled. Otherwise they may veer from the path. Right? You see in the Gita, a Brahmin can only do his duties if he has qualities. A Kshatriya can only do his duties if he has qualities. Right? Krishna there doesn't mention all the different kinds of Brahminical duties or all the different kinds of Kshatriya duties. He doesn't mention. For the Vaishya and Shudra, he just mentions their duties. He doesn't say anything about qualities. Because you can be a great businessman and be number one demon. But you can't be a great Kshatriya, you know, if you're a demon. Like that, you have to be a devotee. To be a good Brahmin, you have to be a devotee. Right? So the Brahmins, the Vaishyas and Shudras, they just need some control, then their mind is peaceful, right? Because of the nature of their work, the mind can become dissatisfied very easily. You're doing business, so you can become dissatisfied, not making more. You know, and you're always dissatisfied how to make more and more. So if there's some restriction, when there's restriction, the mind is peaceful. When the mind is unrestricted, it's crazy, and one is very frustrated. Like you see, sometimes when you're sitting down, the mind is running all over, and you want to do something, you feel very bad. And when the mind is very peaceful and just fixed at one point, you feel very good. So the Vedic culture is how to make the mind peaceful. So if the businessman knows, you know, this is my limits, his mind is peaceful. The Shudras are always thinking of their art and how to develop, so if they have a direction for that, they know they have to do like this, otherwise, you know, they don't fit into the society, they won't have that, no one's going to care for them. If you don't do your work nicely, you're not, you know, you don't have proper relationships with people, you're not loyal, trustworthy, no one wants you. So it makes their mind very fixed. And then they're peaceful, and they're very satisfied. Then the Kshatriyas, it's the rules. And they're kept in, and so they're to see that it happens, but they're kept in line by the Brahmins. The Brahmins keep them in line that in the Shastra here, you've considered these three points, but you've forgotten these two. Therefore, that's why you're having difficulty in applying your solution. So if you look at all these five, then you'll have a better result. But that's where they stop also. This is very important also. And this was also a major failure that we would have in application. Is the Brahman comes to that point. This is all, the scriptures say all these different things. There's these five points to consider. Now it is up to you what you do. So the Brahman, just like the Vaishyas and the Shudras come up to a point with the democracy and all that, it stops and the king makes the decision. The Brahmins come down with their advice and it stops. The decision's the king's. And if he makes a decision that they don't really approve of, again they'll advise. He takes it, doesn't take it, it doesn't bother them, personally. It may bother them that the country may not be run properly. But personally they don't take it. He didn't take it because they know, the king, he's absorbed in all these things, sometimes they get carried away. You know, Shomika Rishi. He's a king. He's out. He's running around, fighting, hunting, doing all these things. You don't notice what's going on. You get totally fatigued and thirsty. And then he walks in and gets no reception. He does a big deal. It's Kshatriyas. You know, it's not a, you know. Whole point is, as he's saying there, is you shouldn't do this to someone who's a subordinate. So the Brahmins are seeing the kings are there, in their, means their wards. So it's just like for your child, they go out, yell, scream, and play, and you know, make themselves tired and this, and then they come in and they're in a bad, grumpy mood and all this and that, and you know, you're busy doing something and they freak out, and it's just kids. So they don't take it so seriously. So that is the point, is that otherwise we think, we're the Brahmin, why they're not listening, this and that. That means because there's desire. I'm the doer. I said, it is done. What is it? Listen, Rami's, let it be written, let it be done. You know, like that. That was his thing. You know, that's the Kshatriya's things. What I speak happens. Ram, one word, one arrow, one wife. If he said it, it will happen. Like that. If he said he's going to do this, he said, I'm going to kill Ravana, he's going to do it. That's just the way it is. But a Brahmin, he'll speak. Kshatriyas take it, fine. They don't take it. It's their problem. It's not the Brahmin's problem, you know. Krishna's taking care of them because they depend upon God. So they're not in an anxiety. So this is the thing. Brahminical, if we talk, Brahminical management means that. You advise those who know what's going on, but either can't or don't want to get involved in day-to-day hands-on management, they give advice when they're asked, and then that's where they stop. And those who have the ability to actually organize, they should be given that facility. And even they make mistakes, that's part of the game. Everybody's making mistakes. And they're encouraged. Only when it's just seen that they're bad, you know, and they don't actually have a good organization, or their character is very bad, or devotionally very bad, then one may make some adjustment. You'll see kings might fight amongst each other, but it would be based on this. One king sees the next king is not qualified and his subjects are suffering. So because of that, he'll come in, fight, take over that kingdom for the benefit of those subjects. You know, either make that king a vassal or remove him and put someone else on the throne. Or if he has that great of an ability, he may manage the whole thing. But otherwise, their point was just the citizens have to be taken care of. So in a community, you have somebody. Someone's not able to take care of their children properly, this, that. They'll come in and help with that. You know? You can't get away with something. You can't have another person in the community, their kid's crazy running around bothering everybody and no one's going to say anything. No, because a grihasta means they know how to give shelter to the children. So this child is unsheltered. This parent is unqualified. If they're going to be part of our community, they have to become qualified, or they have to leave our community. You know? So liberalness just means allow the society or the community to be destroyed. That's liberality. like that. So that's what we mentioned before. Broad-mindedness is needed. It means broad-mindedness means you come in, help, see what's good, support what's bad. Hare Krishna. What you have that's good, he preserves. What you don't have, he provides. Right? You have some lady, has a kid, there's no husband, there's a lack. The child is not going to get this full input of authority in the family structure. That means someone else, if you want to take this person in the community has to be willing to put in what's missing. Otherwise, don't complain. Don't complain, your kid doesn't respect authority because there's no father. What do you want? What do you expect? So the community to take them must be willing to put that in. However it is. Is this... So the Brahmin is independent. The Brahmin is independent and they work under the king. I mean, they work advising the king. So they come and sit in his court and do all these different things. So it looks like they're working under him. But actually they're not. Right? And then there are those who work under him, but they do have a Brahmin who works above him. That's the Rajguru. You know? The Rajguru doesn't manage, but they know management better than anybody. Right? They know what to do. They could run the whole thing themselves. Because of Brahmins, they don't. Like we see Vashishta. He can run everything. He has no problem. So they have their own management system. You know? They have their own people they work with, and those are independent from the king. And then they see that things are going on, things are being organized. Right? And in this way, then they check. And then they tell the king, this was good, but this was not good. So that dealings are private. Because there's the prestige of the king. Right? In the court, with the other Brahmins, the ministers and that, then he's there. They mention their thing, the king makes his point, everybody says, you know, jai ho, and then, you know, the court is closed. And if they have something, then in private they'll tell. And even after that, if that doesn't work, then the Rajguru will come in and say, you know, this is a problem. You know, like, yeah. Like that. Yes.
In the management of ISKCON temples, you think that the temple president should be brahminically inclined or more kshatriya kind of president?
You missed the point I said. The Brahmins and the kshatriyas are the same entity. Just one doesn't want to get involved in management and the other does. Otherwise, they go through the same training, everything. They have the same body of knowledge. The kshatriya manages from the same body of knowledge that the Brahmin works in. Just his is the martial side. In other words, the Dharma Shastras and the Dhanurveda, like this, these are his main field. But he does that through understanding the philosophy, the Sanskrit, the rituals, the astrology, the histories, logic and argument, all these things, you know, all the different arts and crafts. And like you see, in Krishna's education, it's totally complete. There's nothing more in Vedic education to learn. When he first took Upanayanam, then he practiced the sadhana, right, in the Krishna book. And then when Sandipani Muni was pleased with that, then he taught him all the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. Right? Then, so that was all your scripture. Maharaj was saying yesterday, the sadhana and the scripture, that was learned. Then, because they were kshatriyas, they specifically learned, you know, all the politics and the martial things. Right? So that's that martial son. Then after learning all that, so that they're cultured and refined, you know, then they learn the 64 arts. Because your arts are how you exchange with people. Exchange with people and create a nice atmosphere and all these different things. The arts that creates the niceness, you know. How you put the lights, how you decorate, you know, flower arrangements, the deity dresses, you know, the kirtan. These are all arts. But that's what makes the whole thing nice. The scripture is the deity should be offered nice clothes. One should glorify the Lord, you know, with kirtan. That's the scripture. The art is how nicely you do it. How you arrange it. How you put it on. So the arts are very necessary to encourage and enliven the human society. That's why the shooters are such an integral part. You know? And everybody knows arts. Like that. Vaishyas will know some. Kshatriyas will know some. Emperors will know all of them. Right? The emperors and the queens, they study all the arts. And others will according to their interest. Like that. You know? King has to know everything. Otherwise, how does he know if they've done proper decoration? How does he know if the singer is singing properly or the dancers are dancing properly? How does he know if the painter painted properly? How does he know if the suttas who are singing his glories and saying so many things are saying in the proper, they may be not using proper Sanskrit because he knows Sanskrit. How does he know that the Brahmins are doing their right rituals? Because he knows what rituals are. How does he know if they pick the right times? Because he knows times. He just doesn't sit down and do it. They'll say, pick a proper time. And then they'll say, yes, Maharaj, we found this time. Oh, explain to me what are the glories of this time. And they'll say, oh, this planet is in this house and this nakshatra and this. And because he knows it, then yes, very good, very nice time. So they have to know everything, all the knowledge and all the arts. Then they work very, very nicely. So the point is they are Brahmins, but they do the Kshatriya activities. So they're Kshatriyas. Just like Drona, if he didn't step foot on the battlefield, he's a Brahmin. As soon as he stepped foot on the battlefield, start fighting instead of teaching, he's a Kshatriya. You can kill him. He's no longer a Brahmin. Because he's not doing, a Brahmin won't go on the battlefield. So now he's on the battlefield, he's a Kshatriya. He's not a Brahmin anymore. We see Priyavrata. When his brother, Uttanapada, took up the throne, he just went off to the forest. He was happy in his meditation. Lord Brahma had to come and say, hey, come back. Because that Kshatriya nature, okay, duty is there, people are suffering, okay, I'll do it. But for his own, no, I'd rather stay in the forest. And you see, as soon as the sun is ready, gone. Right? Prachina Barhishad, as soon as the Prachetas were, like, ready, he went. You know, every king, as soon as it's ready, Parikit was ready. Pandavas are gone. Because of that nature. Therefore, they're detached. So this idea of passionate, attached, when someone's attached, that's ignorance. You know? I mean, it stems from passion, but it's they think they're going to get something out of that. Kshatriya has all these things. It just helps. One, if you have a lot of opulence, people think that this guy's really great. You know? The king walks in just very simple and humble. Everyone goes, that's the king? You know? You know, he comes in, big this, that, and then everyone, oh, yeah. You know? But it's not for himself. It's for doing that duty. And you can tell it. Someone may say, well, it's not for me. But you can tell it is. You can also tell it's not for them, because it's not. Right? Neither they let anyone take advantage of it, neither do they take advantage of it. It's used when it's needed, and when it's not, it's not. So it's a very fine point. So when we look at the culture, you know, we always want to point our finger, well, it's this one's fault, that one's fault, it's everybody's fault. Because there's a mood that's there. You know, the point is like presidents want to say we're the managers, GBC should be Brahmins and give us a break. But then when it comes to financial problems, manpower problems, then they should solve it themselves. Not expect that the GBC will arrange it. And when the GBC comes in and says this is below standard, your temple is below standard, it's not clean, it's not maintained, the sadhana is bad of your devotees, they have to listen because they're Brahmins. So the point is, the knife cuts both ways. The problem is we're expert at the half a duck logic. And that's it. And just the concept that there's a whole duck, you know, and it's alive. We're used to a dead half a duck. We're not used to an alive whole duck. So the problem is not the system. The problem is, we don't want to take our part in the system. Because we have our own ideas of control, power, influence, wealth, facilities. And so that's a great problem. So if everybody understands where they fit and just do it, it works perfectly. As Maharaj was pointing out yesterday. I mean, the head has no problem with arms. Right? You know? It means it picks up the food, puts it in the mouth. You know, heads really like food. You know? But the mouth doesn't mind that after chewing on it a while, it swallows and it goes to the stomach. You know? So the economic development goes is in, happening in the stomach. They don't care. You know? And then they get it, they distribute it. So the whole thing works very, very nicely. We accept our part, it works nice. You know? What if the kids all thought, well, I don't want to be just, you know, on the bottom, you know, I'm just a small guy in the family, I want to be on the top. You know, my word's as good as everybody else, you know, I got a mouth. You know, I got a modem, you know, like that. Not only that, you know, it's 96, whatever those funny things, bowds, you know. So I got a bigger modem than most TBC, you know. You know, I'm on every conference there is on the planet. So my word's as good as anybody else. But that's not reality. So we have to just look at our place from a very detached thing and figure it out. Or take shelter of others who can give us that direction. So the trust has to start from somewhere. We may say, well, I don't trust. But it has to start from somewhere. You know? So the whole point is everyone should just let go, try. But that point is there. It goes all the ways, both ways. Someone wants to be a hands-on manager and wants everyone to keep their hands off, then when it, whether it sinks or swims, then it's theirs. You can't expect, well, the GBC has to put in money. GBC doesn't have to put in money. Since when does the king go, the kingdom's having tough times, they go to the Brahmins and say, you have to give us, you know, you have to arrange some money for us. It just doesn't function. So the point is everyone just has to decide what's happening, and that's it. One may say, well, because in our idea, the one with the power is on the top. But as Maharaj pointed out yesterday, it's not. The one with the detachment is on the top. Therefore, you can have, and Brahmins also work as a group, because they're individuals. But it's not a committee and power and this and that. They get together, they talk, everybody gets the idea, they just do it. That's the thing. You get a bunch of Brahmins together doing the puja and this and that. They just know what has to be done and they just do it. Like, let's say, after the deities are dressed, before the darshanartik, there's 10 things that have to happen. You know, you have to move this, you have to put this on, do this and that. So, you may have a general thing, who does what. But it's generally quite loose, you'll see, amongst Brahmins. They don't get that much into organization. Sometimes, if you have someone who knows it, he may say like this. But if someone else is not there, it's not that, well, that's not my job. They just know, okay, I generally do, you know, point 2 and 3, but I see also 4 and 5 has to be done now, no one's here, I just do it. And the person then comes later, that, hey, you did my, it's not a thing. It's a very different mentality, because they just click into the mood, and they just do it. It's a very, very subtle thing. It means, in other words, Brahmins get things done without heavy organization. Kshatriyas, it has to be organized. You know, Vaishyas will organize only if there's profit. Right? If there's profit, I'll do it. No profit, I won't do it. Kshatriya, it's religion, it's to be done. Whether there's profit or not. Because they know if it's done, there will be profit. From Dharma comes Artha, comes economic development. So when the Dharma is established, the society will be prosperous. Just like it said, when the wife is like Lakshmi, in her chastity and behavior, then the family is prosperous. Economic development is automatic. Because her mood, everything is so nice, everybody is so satisfied, everyone does their best. Her mood's bad, everybody becomes, their senses, everything become miserly. No one can do the best. So it's like that. From Dharma comes Artha. So in our approach to social development, we want solutions, and we're generally talking economic solutions. And to solve our economic solutions, there should be some management. But this is a Vaishya's approach. That's why you'll see in the social development circles, and they'll also talk, well, why don't the Brahmins come out and get the hands dirty and grow a few carrots? Because that's to them. If there's no tangible material profit, then there's no benefit. But that's why in the Vedic culture, it's approached from a different angle. It comes from the philosophy into the Dharma, then down to Artha. Like that. That is the approach. So only once you if you establish dharma, art is automatic. I mean, I didn't hear of any financial problems up until we threw you know, respective authority out of our movement in the mid-80s. Up to that time, the principles were going on. They may not have been going nicely. There may have been a lot of people with a lot of bad attitudes, but because they were doing what they were supposed to do, there was great opulence. Great opulence. But as soon as you threw out a respective authority, then the whole movement became poor. As Maya was just talking about, you know, the new bhakta knows everybody and can say anything they want about anybody. That situation will never prosper. Never. You can bring in Kabi Pad or any pod you want. You will not prosper. Impossible. Because the only reason Kabi's principles work is because you do something and you make an economic profit out of it. And if the person doesn't function, you fire them. You know? So these principles work in the business world. You know? I guarantee you, the people who are the big political leaders that run countries and that don't read Kabi. These are all business managers. Right? Because we have the idea that if you manage, you're a kshatriya. But a housewife is managing her house. It doesn't look nice just by magic. You know, it's hard work going in and deciding what colors, what goes where, keep everything in its place and that. It's a big, big management. You know? So management's an art. And the kshatriyas use management as one of their major tools. And they use it in a very serious way. Right? And even just being an administrator, you can still be an administrator and be a shudra. You know, bureaucracy is used by the kshatriyas, but just being a bureaucrat doesn't make you a kshatriya. That's also a shudra art. You know, how to push the papers around and, you know, I mean, it's an art, okay. Paper comes in, you go through them, you take them all, you decide, okay, these ones are useful, these ones are not so useful, these ones are useless, throw them out. Okay, then I take these, then I see if these are, then divide them again, and then I end up with a couple, and that's an art. That's an administrative art. That doesn't make a kshatriya. Kshatriya, as we described before, is a mood. There's a challenge. Right? And we come to that challenge. Brahmins can manage. You know? Though it may not be as economically wonderful. Sometimes it is. If they know, like, you see, what is his name? Chanakya. He organized and did everything until the time, you know, for 8 years. He did heavy-duty organization and management for 8 years until he got the king on the throne. And once the king was on the throne, it was safe, he was situated there, no enemies. Then he stepped back. It's like Drona. Drona could run a kingdom. Right? Drona got half a kingdom. He got half of Drupad's kingdom. You know, you never hear that that wasn't run properly. Right? It's like Yamunacharya, Brahmin. Brahmin kid. He hears about the king has a very proud, puffed up, you know, unqualified as far as culture goes, but very qualified intellectually. He had a chief priest. And he was fighting, you know, verbal fighting, logic with everybody. He was a very nasty person. Yamunacharya heard about him. I think they needed some, I don't know what it was, but they decided to go. And he was just a little kid. I think he was, I don't think he was 8. I think it was Astavakra. I think he was 12. He went. And so he sent word like that to the palace that says, I'm willing to fight with this person. You just send us, send somebody to pick us up, you know? Like that. You know, the thing was, is why we have to send somebody, you know? Says, well, if you don't want a discussion, fine, you know? But if you want a discussion, you know, if we're going to talk to the Rajguru, we expect some reciprocal, you know, if we've come to defeat the Rajguru, we expect some reciprocal respect. You know? Then it was like, we're not messing with just some ordinary Brahmin here. So then they sent the palanquin and all a royal thing to bring him from the ashram. And then when he came and he stepped out of the palanquin, they were surprised. It's a 12-year-old kid, right? The queen, because she knew all the sciences and all that, saw the kid, said, this kid's winning. She just knew, this is the kid, you know? So then he comes in and the Rajguru is like, well, I'm not arguing with the kid. I you know, it's against my prestige. I argue with, you know, mature Brahmins and all. It's just, in other words, you're afraid I'm going to defeat you. You know, then you can't say anything. So then they sit down. And then the Rajguru, because it's, well, you're a kid, so the junior always asks the questions first. Because asking the questions, then that's the hard part, giving the answer. So therefore, the senior is the one who gives the answers. The junior asks first. So he said, okay, you ask the questions first. So he says, okay, I have three questions. One is, I want you to prove by Shastra that you yourself, meaning the Rajguru, your mother is barren, means she has no children. Right? You have to prove that the queen is unchaste and the king is a sinful man. By Shastra. You know, the Rajguru is thinking, you know, how do I do that? I mean, I'm here. It means my mother had a child. She's not barren. And, you know, how can I say that the king and queen, I'll lose my head, you know? So he couldn't say anything, you know. And as soon as he said the questions, the queen stood up and said, he's won. Right? And then, then it was kind of like, wait. Okay. Then let's go through this. Now, you've asked these questions. Now, what if, then the point came up is, okay, very nice questions, but what if there's no answers? Maybe you just ask some crazy questions. I mean, there is a point that a fool can ask more questions than a wise man can answer. So maybe you just made these up. Let's first see you answer them. If you answer them, then I accept defeat. So then Yamunacharya said, yes. So the first point is that your mother is barren. Means that according to the Dharma Shastras, when a woman has two children, she's known as Sumangali. And she's not considered barren, because if there's one, if one dies, then she has no kids. So the Shastras say when she has two, then that's considered that now she is like fully like a mother. Like that. Then he quoted the scriptures. Then he said, as far as the queen says that chastity means they've never, been associated closely with another man. So before marriage, then according to the Shastra, there's, I think it's seven demigods reside in the body of the girl. That's why kanyas, or unmarried girls, are considered very auspicious, because all the demigods are residing in them. Then at the time of marriage, they agree to leave, and then the husband takes over. So she's already been associating with seven men before she even got married. You know? And then the third one, it says the king, because he takes the tax of the people, he takes a sixth of the tax of the people, he takes on one sixth of their karma. Therefore he gets their sinful activities, he's sinful. Like that. Then the king was defeated. He had promised, I think, half of his kingdom, so Yamunacharya got that. He managed it expertly. Like that, you know, so expertly, he got so involved that then his guru later, after some time, said, okay, now it's time to get him back. He sent another disciple. He says, you go there and get him back. You know, preach to him, get him back. So the disciple was thinking how to get him back. So he went, and then he thought he really likes this particular kind of spinach. Right, so that Brahmin, his godbrother, went out and collected all this spinach, special kind of wild spinach that only grows in the forest. You can't get it in the cities. He would bring that and gave it to the cook and said, he went to the back door, knocked on the cook's door and said, you cook this for the king, the king will give you, you know, plenty of blessings. I know he likes this. So the cook cooked it and the king ate it and, you know, liked this. And he told the cook, this is very, you know, very nice, you know. And then the next day, then that Brahmin came and gave like that. For 3 months, every day he'd come and give the spinach. Then one day he didn't come. And then that spinach didn't come, and the king called the cook. Why didn't that come? You didn't cook every day? You cooked this spinach. Why you didn't cook? He says, well, to tell you the truth, I don't arrange it. There's some sadhu. He comes here every day and brings the spinach. I don't know who he is or this or that. The king said, get me that sadhu. So then, of course, the next day, then the Brahmin shows up, and then he gets audience with the king. He recognizes his god brother. He preaches to him and this and that about, you know, the temporariness of life and this and that. Then he left. Then you get those prayers by Vijayamunacharya. Whenever I think of sense gratification, then I spit it to thought and this and that. So it means the Brahman, who is what's technically called, at least in Sanskrit, what they use, the term they use in South, they call Sri Karya, means they're able to manage. They are generally in their proper position, they are the secretary to the acharya, like Srup Damodar to Lord Chaitanya. They are the head pujaris and, you know, managers for the deities, you know, manage the festival and all these kind of things. Or they are ministers to the kings. So they know management. They can manage. But generally they don't. But if need be, they can. So, like that. And then, of course, the Vaishnavas can do so many of these things, because he does it for Krishna. It means a Vaishya doing Vaishya work for Krishna without attachment, without desire, without wanting results, and without ego. What's the difference between him doing that and the Brahmin doing it? It's going to be the same result. Right? So the Brahmin knows how to do it, and if there's a need to do it, he'll do it. When there's no need, he won't do it. Right? So therefore, he could do business if need be. A Vaishya, whether he needs it or not, he will do business. That's the difference. So you have a very unique platform for the Vaishya. It means one should find one's own thing, but there's emergency. And when emergency is over, one naturally comes back to one's position. So it's a bigger involved. In other words, everybody is in the boat together. Everybody has come from the bad background. You know, as in that one of the verses in Maharaj's class, Sutta Goswami is saying, he's talking Viloma, you know, it just means low birth. But by association with devotees, then one becomes qualified by glorifying the Lord's position. So by association with devotees, then we become qualified to actually take up human life within the Varnashram system. Like that. It means human life starts with that. Otherwise, it's not human life. Okay? So, it's all right. Maharaj is happy. Okay, so we'll end here. So, thank you all very much. Hope we haven't been a disturbance. So, sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Jai Advaita Maharaj ki. Jai.